tonight. In the middle of a pandemic, sending students back to school in Georgia, Florida, Oklahoma, and Arizona. From teachers embracing virtual learning to one student facing threats, discipline for sounding the alarm on the lack of social distancing at school, now seeing positive cases.
This is the kind of thing that can't be just like swept under the rug. Like, people are dying from this.
Plus, night of unrest in Chicago. More than 100 people arrested, dozens of stores smashed. What sparked the mayhem? What's next for a city under lockdown?
Nightline starts right now with Byron Pitts.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Tonight, looming in the minds of parents, students, and teachers in America, is it safe to go back to school? This is nearly 100,000 children test positive for COVID-19 in the last 2 weeks of July. Now the school district staying their course despite growing doubts.
It's these crowded hallways that Hannah Waters feared as she headed back to her Georgia school last week.
From like the outside, it looks like a normal day. Like, we're just going about it and trying to stay as safe as possible. But when you really go on the inside, that's partly why I took the photo, is because people really don't know what it looks like from the inside.
Just 2 days into the school year, the sophomore honor student at North Paulding High School took out her phone and began to film the crowds.
You really get an insight to what it looks like from the students' and the teachers' view, how dangerous it is to be in there and how easily it is to contract things in there.
Her video going viral, thousands sharing her post, sparking a nationwide conversation on whether schools should open as coronavirus cases continue to rise across the country.
I've had a lot of people contact me, friends that I haven't talked to in a while, like text me and say, like, thank you for doing this. And there's been some people taking screenshots and saying stuff like, we're going to jump every girl named Hannah in the 10th grade, or even someone who lives in my neighborhood saying, like, oh, I know where she lives.
By every definition, those are threats.
Yeah.
But Hannah's video turned out to be a warning. Over the weekend, North Paulding superintendent sent a letter to parents stating 9 students and faculty members had tested positive for COVID, saying that the school was temporarily switching to digital learning for at least 2 days to be clean.
What surprised you the most during this process, and what's disappointed you the most?
I was very upset. The parents and some teachers were upset that I did this, because I'm just trying to keep your kids safe. I'm just trying to keep even you safe, because they come back to you after school.
The global pandemic rages on. The U.S. now surpassing 5 million total cases, the number of deaths increasing in multiple states. But teachers and students across the country are already returning to school, grappling with the life and death risk of going back in the time of COVID.
We've been reckless with bars and beaches and restaurants, and we simply cannot be reckless with our public schools. This is not a petri dish.
On the eve of a new school year, a report from the American Academy of Pediatrics finding over 380,000 children have tested positive since the pandemic started. Nearly 100,000 of those in just the last 2 weeks of July. And yet, school districts across the country have pushed for in-person learning, opening a new front line in the fight against COVID.
Good news. All schools can reopen.
In New York City, the biggest public school system in the country, schools will move forward with in-person learning and follow public health recommendations, including mandatory face coverings for all. Dr. Anthony Fauci weighing in today with ABC's David Muir.
Do you feel comfortable with much of the country sending children back to school?
You know, it's really a mixed bag in some respects, David, because we live in a pretty large country that have differences in different parts of the country. I think as a default position, we should try to the best of our ability to get the children back to school. Having said that, as a default principle, which we should try to do, there's a however there. But the however is that we've always got to make our primary consideration the health, the safety, and the welfare of the children and of the teachers.
It's this delicate balance that has proven so challenging. School started last week in Georgia, Cherokee County in suburban Atlanta. More than 250 students and staff were asked to quarantine after at least 11 students and 2 staff members tested positive. Tiffany Robbins is a middle school teacher in that same district.
So it's Monday morning, and I'm getting ready to start my second week of school with students.
Robbins' school opted for in-class learning, forcing her to make a difficult choice.
It took a lot of soul searching, but I decided that, you know, I love teaching. I love what I do. And if this is the only way I can do it in this county in this point in my life, then I have to go back into the classroom.
It was her choice, but not an easy one.
I am feeling kind of conflicted. It was wonderful to be in the classroom, but I'm worried. I'm worried for them, I'm worried for my personal children, I'm worried for my students. I personally did make sure my will was there and updated.
The fact that she had to draft a will and like filed for life insurance, obviously it worries me.
50 miles south in Gwinnett County, Georgia, the reality isn't much different. The majority of residents in this part of the state are Black and Latino.
In these minority populations, there have been health disparities that already existed before this pandemic happened. And the pandemic just shone a really big spotlight on those economic and racial disparities that we see in healthcare.
Georgia State Representative and Emory University lecturer Jasmine Clark is also a microbiologist. She knows the science and opted for virtual learning this fall.
I signed up my daughter for digital learnings. I fear for my daughter's safety. I fear for everyone's safety. I am hearing the stories of people who just wish that we as a community would do the right thing collectively so that we can stop the spread of this virus.
But Representative Clark says her daughter isn't happy about their tough decision.
Jada loves to be around her friends, around her peers. So choosing virtual meant that I was taking that from her. But as a scientist and just understanding viral transmission, and also as a person who represents this area and represents those teachers and those school employees and those bus drivers, I really had to look at the bigger picture.
In-person learning has been a contentious issue across the country. In Wausau, Wisconsin, parents urging a return to classrooms. But last week, more than 1,000 teachers called on Michigan's Governor Gretchen Whitmer to keep schools closed, a sentiment being echoed in school districts across the country, including Oklahoma. A lifelong educator, Nancy Shively, never predicted her career would end this way.
Maybe someday I'll get to go back.
I've always loved teaching. I love working with kids, even the ornery ones. I'm just thinking, you know, this doesn't feel safe. I just don't see how they're going to avoid outbreaks.
As Tulsa schools resume in-person learning this week, Shively thought it was too dangerous, so she's resigning.
I've got underlying health conditions. I'm over 60. None of that would bode well were I to get coronavirus.
But she's not stopping there. Shively is so outraged, she's penned an op-ed in USA Today, blasting the president she helped vote into office.
One of the worst mistakes in my life. When the pandemic hit, I'm watching this and watching him abdicate his responsibilities, and I'm like, I cannot be part of this Republican Party anymore. People are dying. I think what we're doing is we're conducting this big experiment with schools reopening, and the people who are going to pay the price are teachers and children.
In states with high infection rates, many districts have had to readjust their plans.
We'll do a post-reflection, but at the end of the unit.
Arizona high school chemistry teacher Catherine Driving Hawk is back in school, but without her students.
It's sad. I feel like I'm talking to myself the whole time. I miss the presence of having students in my classroom and having my social interaction with them.
On the next page.
For the 10-year veteran, this has been one of the biggest challenges of her career.
Remember when you are logging in.
This semester, Catherine has planned for remote learning, but as a chemistry teacher, there are still barriers.
Being a chemistry teacher, it's a fine line. The way I teach is very interactive. I like kids being in groups. I like them doing lab work, and having them in the classroom would certainly make that easier, but you know, that would require them not being 6 feet apart. If we had to wear masks, that could also pose a difficulty in hearing each other. I could just see that being very difficult to manage all at the same time of trying to teach. So I think what we're doing right now is the best we can do under the circumstances.
Back in Georgia, high school sophomore Hannah Waters doesn't regret sharing the videos of those crowded hallways. She was first suspended over the viral photo, but her suspension has since been rescinded.
Do you prefer to go back to school, virtual school? What would you like to do?
For safety reasons, from those threats and from Corona, I'd probably want to do online school. But for better education, for an appropriate education, I learn better in in-person school. So unless something changes, like masks are required, then I probably wouldn't go back to in-person.
But I would imagine most honor students love school. I would imagine you love school.
And I value my education at North a lot, and they've always done me right. They've always given me a good education. I don't want to have to risk my life or my family's life just to learn better. Because at this point, it's a decision over safety or education, and it's an incredibly hard decision for everyone to make.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today, we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Chicago tonight, a city under lockdown after a night of vandalism and turmoil. What started as a police-involved shooting quickly devolving into chaos as rumors spread. Here's ABC's Alex Perez.
There's big groups that look like they're looting further down south. There's no police officers. They're looting a store on Wabash, north of Washington.
Somebody with an emergency?
I need more people.
A stunning scene in one of the country's most expensive stretches of high-end shopping and retail.
Going into jewels right now.
Last night, hundreds of stores ransacked as looters overwhelmed police and destroyed property along Chicago's upscale Magnificent Mile.
I heard glass being shattered at 7-Eleven, Walgreens, people screaming and running all over the place, cop sirens all around the area.
What occurred in our downtown and surrounding communities was abject criminal behavior, pure and simple.
The looting, police say, stemming from a police-involved shooting Sunday. Authorities say a 20-year-old suspect who allegedly fired at police was shot and injured in the Englewood neighborhood of Chicago's South Side.
After this shooting, a crowd gathered on the south side following the police action. Tempers flared.
They don't do nothing but hold us down.
Residents and activists, megaphones in hand, live streaming these videos to social media of a standoff with police following the shooting. False information about that shooting, investigators say, spreading on social media, fueling the melee.
CPD became aware of several social media posts encouraging looting downtown.
Hundreds of Chicago police officers were dispatched downtown as the first incident unfolded after midnight.
People were everywhere. Vehicles were going down the wrong way, down a one-way street.
The incident coming after a difficult summer in Chicago from shutdowns due to COVID-19 to peaceful mass protests in the wake of George Floyd's death. And a year after fatal shootings were down, deadly gun violence in July more than doubling in the city since the same time last year. Police and citizens are on edge, making yesterday's looting all the more painful.
This was an assault on our city. Stores that were targeted were more than just large chain stores. They're all small businesses.
This is the third time we've boarded up since May.
They didn't get inside the store here today. They just busted the window out. That's all I got today, which, thank God, that's all they did here.
Communities left picking up the pieces once again.
Our thanks to Alex. Earlier today, I spoke to Dr. Amina Matthews, a community organizer, anti-violence activist, who grew up on the south side of Chicago and found herself at the standoff with police during the unrest on Sunday night. Dr. Matthews, thank you so much for joining us. What's the feeling on the ground now in the community tonight, since time has passed?
You know, time has passed far as the hours of the day, but there hasn't been change, so time really hasn't passed. We're still stuck in that pain. We're still stuck in the devastation because of the policing, of this lack of security, the lack of trust from the police officers. And yes, the looting happened, and I'm not minimizing that, and I'm just so grateful that it wasn't any lives that was lost.
Certainly, the frustration in Chicago goes back decades, but like in much of America, in this moment, it's been a challenging summer for the people of Chicago, facing a global pandemic, protests in the wake of George Floyd, and now an uptick in gun violence. Where do you go from here? How are people expected to manage that level of stress?
We're living this state of emergency here in Chicago. So it's just, we must make wise decisions. Tonight, we're on a curfew, and, you know, hopefully that will kind of hold back the action of the pain. But you know what? The bottom line is that we must secure our community and provide mental health services. We must make sure we're in a pandemic. We're in a powerless state of being for mask and social distancing, but to care and raise our community up and save our youth, our next generation. They feel that it's at a breaking point, that they're not being heard. It's not right that looting, it's not right. It's not right for the police to shoot and kill a Black man over and over again.
You know, I know that you're a proud daughter of the South Side of Chicago, a woman of color, an activist, a woman of faith. How do you rally all that you are and all that you believe to impact the community?
My faith plays a big part to help me stay sane out here. I am to leave a place better than I found it. I challenge anyone that is in the sound of my voice. I need my families, my young men, my young women in Chicago, that if you can hear my voice, please, this is not the way to stop any problems, to loot, to shoot. What we're going to do is we're going to come together, my 18-year-olds and more, to vote. Let's come out and fight.
Dr. Matthews, thank you so very much for your witness, your courage, your grace. Godspeed to you and to your family and to your beloved city of Chicago.
Thank you very much. Thank you for you guys' time. Thank you, guys. God bless you.
And finally tonight, home is where the heart is. A flicker of hope shining bright in a sea of debris.
Happy birthday, babe.
Happy birthday to you.
Left behind from a deadly explosion in Beirut last week. Friends surprising 27-year-old Dina Rachmi with a birthday cake. Dina checking the damage done to her apartment, picking up the pieces of her life with the help of loved ones. That's Nightline for this evening. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.